You've got the Think Christian podcast here, where there's no such thing as secular. I'm Josh Larson, and today we're celebrating a new TC project just completed. It's our latest free ebook called Pop Sounds. We've done a handful of ebooks over the years. I think our most popular are probably A Theology of Star Wars. We have essays on all 9 Skywalker films in that one. And then people really love our Theology of the Office. If you haven't come across those yet, go ahead to thinkchristian.net/ebooks and you can download free copies of both of those there. This time we wanted to turn our attention to music. So we reached out to our music writers, and pretty quickly the conversation navigated toward the Book of Psalms, the musical poetry of the Bible. We tossed around a bunch of ideas. Eventually, we landed on Pop Psalms, how our favorite pop, rock, hip-hop, and country songs echo the wisdom literature of the Bible. So the ebook features 12 essays, each one tackling a different song from a different TC writer and considering the song in light of Psalms, Ecclesiastes, Proverbs. It's available right now. Again, you can get it for free at thinkchristian.net/popsalms. Now, this show is going to be something of a mixtape of the ebook. We're going to jump around those essays and discuss a couple of them in depth. We'll also hear a bunch of the music. I've got Eric Danielson and Sarah Welch Larson joining me along the way. Plus, our resident DJ, John J. Thompson, will, of course, be weighing in. First, though, a quick bit of feedback I wanted to share from Joshua Coldejelly. This came in response to our recent conspiracy theories episode. On that one, we discussed Tenet and Lovecraft Country, explored what both of those might have to say about this current conspiracy craze that a fair amount of Christians seem to be trapped in. Joshua wrote, "Listening to the discussions brought me a lot of peace, as conspiracy theories and the church's response to them has frustrated and discouraged me the past month or so. You and the guests getting to the heart of why the world can be so attuned to conspiracy thought was very enlightening and refreshing. The podcast calmed a lot of storms in my soul this week, and I just wanted to let you and the wonderful Reframe team know that." Thank you so much, Josh. That was nice to hear because I knew going in that that one was going to be a tricky topic. I really appreciate J.R. Forasteros and Claude Acho helping me navigate that one. Check out the Conspiracy Theories episode of the podcast if you haven't already. And if you have some feedback to share on that episode or any of them, go ahead and reach us at tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. Of course, we're always grateful for reviews on Apple Podcasts that we also get if you want to give some feedback that way. Just a star rating is fine, but if you could throw a sentence or two our way, that would be even better. Okay, let's get back to the music and our Pop Psalms ebook. First up, Eric Danielson and I talk about Kate Myrick's essay on Lorde's 2013 breakout hit, Royals. So when we decided to do a music-themed ebook for TC, there were a couple of names who immediately came to mind as people who had to participate, and one of them was Eric Danielson. Eric, thanks for agreeing to that. I appreciate the way you love and listen to music and then write about it, something you've been doing for a while now. I can't remember. Have you ever told me what your first professional piece of writing was on music?
Wow. We're going to say professional as in got paid for.
Sure.
It probably came post-college. I have a famous only to me story about interviewing the band Me Without You for a Christian rock magazine when I was in college and
okay.
promised my first $75 for getting paid to write, did the entire interview, sent the draft in, and then immediately got an email back saying that the magazine was folding.
Ouch.
So that one didn't work out, but I think shortly after that, I got some other like freelance reviewing gigs that paid, you know, not much, but enough to count. So
that was kind of a dose of reality at the start of a journalism career, I would say.
It really should have, yeah, told me something, but yes. I didn't pay much attention to that moment, apparently. So,
well, I'm definitely glad you stuck with it for sure. We're going to zero in on year 2013. So I guess that'd probably be jumping ahead from where you're talking about for our discussion here. We're going to talk about New Zealand's Ella Yelich O'Connor, who goes by Lorde. She burst onto the music scene that year as a 16-year-old with Royals. Now, TC writer Kate Myrick, she was fairly young herself at the time, and in her Pop Psalms essay, she writes about how Lorde, quote, offered a countercultural response to the bubblegum sweetness of other female pop artists that I would skip through on my Pandora playlist. I find that pop music by young female artists influenced by rock, grunge, and emo culture has a catchy way of commenting on the consumerism that has dominated our culture. Lord to Me embodies the voice of the Old Testament teacher in Ecclesiastes as she lilts through her critique of royalty, think the Kardashians, Bachelor stars, sports legends, and other super celebrities. So that was Kate's take, Eric. I'm curious, what do you remember about royals when you first heard it?
So I was a little older than Kate when that song first came out. Mm-hmm. And I try not to do this as much anymore, but I think that I still had a bit of, as I'm sure I still do, but a little bit more of the snob gene in me. And I think we had just been, I don't know if I have the timeline right, but I think we had just been through kind of the early breakthroughs of folks like Taylor Swift and Miley Cyrus. And I just assumed, based on really nothing at all, that Lorde was kind of in that same camp. And so I actually didn't hear the song for a while. I kind of just avoided it. And that was, again, a mistake on my part. And the first time I heard it, I realized this is not the same. And I was just really struck by, you know, everything from how great the production on the song was, but just how delightful and how breezy and yet how pointed her lyrics were, that there was just this refreshing blend of, yeah, like kind of almost satire and critique there, but in a way that just made you really smile. And so I've tried to make up for lost time and rectify that mistake, and I've listened to Royals quite a few times since, but I was a little slow on the uptake there. But every song's like gold teeth, gray goose dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room, we don't care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams. But everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair. And we'll never be royal. It's a one in our blood. That kind of. So in her essay, Kate does dig into that parallel with Ecclesiastes that she sees, especially in regard to what is said there about wealth and status. Tell me a little bit how you see the song working in conjunction with this book of wisdom literature, Eric. Yeah, I mean, I think Kate's essay is right on the money, and this idea that that Lorde has recast, you know, sort of the message of Ecclesiastes in this vernacular that is informed by things like influencer culture and pop music and reality TV. There's just a real, you know, in this language that is a language of wealth and a language of luxury, she really just kind of goes back to that simple message of, you know, what it means to harness and appreciate the really simple, beautiful things in life, to appreciate the people that you're with and the relationships that you have with one another. And I think that's a really cool, I don't know, just the bent of that song. It's a timeless message in a song that's very much of its time lyrically. And I guess I really appreciate the way that she was able to do that.
There's a wisdom there, and also maybe combined with it a little bit of being a 16-year-old, a little bit of naivete that, you know, even as she does mention the song and Kate writes about this, that she too is tempted by some of these things, but has made this choice to throw them off, which is, I don't know, maybe both harder and easier to do as a teenager until you get older and in some ways wealth or status, maybe in a different way, in a professional sense, holds a stronger allure. So it's kind of like rejecting that in advance in a way as a 16-year-old, but it works. It gives the song that confidence and also gives it the sort of wisdom that maybe someone would not have until they're much older in life.
Sure. You know, I think there's kind of two things at play at once here, and the best things are usually have more than one layer. But I think that she does come off as wiser than maybe the average 16-year-old in the song. And yet at the same time, I think that one thing that we maybe lose a little bit or overlook a little bit as we get older is that younger people can often, you know, detect authenticity where it exists and the lack of authenticity where it exists. And so as she's examining this culture around her and looking at real people and real items and real artifacts and all of these things, I think she's able to look at it and say, yeah, this is how all these things that you're doing and all these things that you're possessing and all these things that you're striving for maybe don't live up to what you're looking for. Maybe they don't deliver in the ways that you want them to. And so I think that she comes at it in some sense from an outsider's perspective, but also from the perspective of somebody who's kind of grown up with all of these things around her and is now seeing kind of for the first time with adult eyes, whether these things do or don't deliver. And she's able to kind of say, you know, as much as I might still want some of this and maybe I'm going to get some of it, I know that there are things that matter beyond this, maybe matter more than this.
Yeah, so something, you know, that could be described as naivete could also be described as a certain clarity, I guess.
Yeah.
I also I like the idea of counterculture that Kate brings up in her essay, because that's one element I think you do hear in the music. Royals is definitely catchy enough to be a hit, obviously. It's also, you know, sparsely produced, at least compared to a lot of the pop that was out there at the time. And it takes these idiosyncratic swerves, I think of the chorus in particular, that are, they're real stylistic risks, but they do pay off. And the Ecclesiastes connection there is just this counterculture sensibility. There's a cynicism toward wealth as the answer, coming from someone who was really, you know, the one percenter of his time. And that sort of dismissal of wealth and status was and is, will probably always be countercultural, right? And you can kind of hear that sort of dismissal at work in Royals too, both in Lord's lyrics and in the actual music.
Yeah, for sure. I think that there are so many elements in the song that if you extracted them from the rest of the track, that you would say, oh, this melodic touch or this thing with the production, you know, would absolutely fit in another radio hit. But it's kind of the layering that happens there, or the lack of layering that happens there, the way that she uses those elements. And I even think, again, with the lyrics, like, I still think my favorite line in the song is about craving a different kind of buzz, and you can call me Queen Bee. And that's a line that, like, again, you could take that line and put it into a different song and the meaning would totally change. But she's using these elements of, you know, musical and lyrical syntax that she then kind of bends in a different direction. And I think that's what makes you listen close. I think that's what kind of interrupts you, is that you think, oh, I've heard something like this before, and then immediately are kind of thrown on your heels and realize there's something else going on.
Yeah, definitely. The idiosyncratic nature of the song is kind of what catches you more than anything else. So that's Royals. Eric, your essay in the Pop Psalms ebook is on Ms. Jackson, the 2000 hit from rap duo Outkast. Can you give us a little bit of a tease of what you wrote about there?
Sure. Had not spent a ton of time with that song, you know, up until recently, again, kind of revisiting it. I was actually going back through kind of the catalog of Outkast and was reminded of how great that song and that record, Stankonia, is. And there's such a difference. I never really noticed it the first time I heard the song, but in the ways that the Big Boi and Andre 3000 rap about dealing with their, you know, their children's mothers. And the Big Boi verses are really pretty, you know, there's a lot of bravado there, but in the Andre 3000 verses, I heard just this real contrition, this real desire to make that child and that woman whole, which the woman was actually Erykah Badu in real life. And it just really led me down a path of kind of comparing those lyrics to Psalm 51, where David, you know, is expressing maybe the most famous apology, certainly in the Bible and maybe in, you know, kind of Western, you know, culture, kind of literature throughout the ages. And so I was just trying to see where those things lay together, where they kind of diverge, and how, and on so many ways that those verses from Andre 3000 just make me think of David kind of confessing everything and being willing to right the wrongs he's committed.
Yes, that's a song, you know, I probably listened to hundreds of times, but your essay did help me kind of see some new things about it. So, and that's what we're hoping to do with the whole ebook. So thank you for writing that. Thanks for talking about Royals and all the great music stuff you do for TC. Take care. Okay, Eric.
All right. Thank you, Josh.
Hello, everyone. Your in-house DJ, John J. Thompson here. And that was a little bit of the inimitable Alicia Keys' No One from the Spotify playlist that corresponds with this special Pop Psalms project. Want to listen while you read? It's never been easier. Just click the link you see in the email you get from us, or search for the Think Christian profile on Spotify if you don't already follow us, and look for our Pop Psalms playlist. You'll find all 12 of the tracks that we wrote about in the book, including one of the first 45s I ever bought with my own money. Yes, I'd like to tell you that it was Captain Beefheart or Brian Eno, but at 11 years old, I took my lawn mowing money to Kmart and bought Dolly Parton's 9 to 5. And as I say in my essay in the book, I stand by that record and by Dolly, actually, all these years later. You'll also hear Talking Heads, U2, Kendrick Lamar, Outkast, Lorde, Beyoncé, Springsteen, and Kanye West, who you'll hear from a little bit later here in the show. I know you've heard me quote this before, but only because it's so true. Bono observed that the best songs are written by or about people who are running either toward or away from God. I think that covers the wisdom literature pretty well. Whether all of these artists knew what they were doing or not, it's always been fascinating to me when I hear these timeless truths echoing through modern art that asks the best questions. Until all of those questions are finally answered, you'll find me here, head between the speakers, grooving along.
We have another contributor to our Pop Psalms ebook, Sarah Welch Larson, joining us to talk about an essay in the collection. Sarah, you need to explain something to me first. So you wrote about U2's One for the ebook, wonderful essay, by the way. And then when I asked what song and essay you would like to talk about on the show, you chose Roger Nelson's piece on Bruce Springsteen's Badlands. You're not exactly in the demographic for those artists. Let's just say you're a little bit younger. So
just a touch, yeah.
What is it with you and dad rock?
Oh, man, I don't know. I feel like dad rock speaks my language in a way. It's probably the anthems. It's got to be partly my own dad's musical tastes. Yeah, and it feels earnest without being remotely ironic. And I think with both U2 and Springsteen, there's a level of description in there that just really speaks my language. So both of those work for me very much.
Solid reasons. Yeah, that's all speaks to stuff I appreciate about both artists as well. So you're a Springsteen fan. It's fair to say that my pastor, Raj Nelson, is a Springsteen obsessive. The Book of Springsteen is quoted quite often in his sermons at my church. Here's what he wrote in the ebook, in Pop Psalms, about the Boss's 1978 song, Badlands. There's a longing for some expression of healing that is just over the ridge, just out of reach, just around the bend in the road. We live in these badlands, but together we seek after a love, a faith, a community that will raise us into being more fully who we're intended to be. So that's Raj. I'm curious how that matches with what we read in Psalms, Sarah, what those poems are looking for or what those poems are trying to sustain. I'm wondering how Badlands sits alongside your experience of the Psalms.
Yeah, I'm very much on board with, I think Raj mentions the Song of Ascents in his own essay as well, and just this idea that the world we live in is a tough place to live sometimes, but that doesn't mean that we can't be glad to be alive at the same time. Like, those two aren't mutually exclusive ideas. And I'm the kind of person who loves Lent and Advent and kind of the let's sit in the darkness a little bit and wait for the now and the not yet and the recognize that God is at work in the world, but that work is not done yet. And so that also kind of hums along on my frequency as well, the same that dad rock does, you know?
Yeah. Like,
both of those feel very much in tune with each other.
Yeah, there's a psalm-like push and pull, I think, on Badlands between those things you're talking about, between faith and struggle also. The music itself, you know, the music is propulsing forward on the song with real confidence. But then you do have Springsteen's lyrics that work against that as they speak of uncertainty. And then you get the boldness of the chorus, where his hopes rise to erase the doubts and kind of match the chords.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's very interesting that a song like this, an anthem like this, that is so propulsive, also starts with like talking about a crash. Mm. It's probably a car crash and like an arresting of motion, but at the same time, he's still kind of pushing through that particular like accident or whatever it is that's going on. And I think recognizing that there is harm and badness in the world, but not necessarily dwelling in it over long. And I think that that works quite well too.
I think I found another Springsteen U2 connection that I want to run by you, Sarah.
Bring it on.
Okay. In his essay, Raj quotes Springsteen describing his music this way. I always say my verses are the blues and my choruses are the gospel, and I lean a little heavier on the gospel than the blues. So it seems to me you could describe much of U2's music that way as well. No, I think, didn't Bono even describe the Psalms in one interview as the blues?
I think he must have, yeah. And it's interesting because both of those are very, very American genres of music too. And I think that that kind of speaks to, like, I don't know, U2 has this obsession with the United States,
right,
even though they're a very, very Irish band. And I think that, I don't know, they seem to get both of those particular genres very well, while also at the same time making them very much their own and folding them into something that is both a mood and something that you can sing along to really, really loudly in a stadium at the same time. I love that blues and gospel and these dad rock artists in particular are something that really work best as like a communal activity, either when you're in a stadium listening to them play live with 40,000 other screaming people, or even when you're listening to them privately. I don't know about you, but when I'm listening to Bruce Springsteen or I'm listening to U2, quite often I'm singing those lyrics to myself and imagining myself singing them out loud with other people on some level.
Yeah, it's hard to separate, especially if you've ever been to a concert by either of them. It's hard to separate that experience from the music, no matter where you're listening to it. As you were talking too, you know, I wonder if their background in Catholicism for both Springsteen and most of the members of U2 might have something to do with this understanding of the blues and gospel that they talk about, because that's something they share as well, in addition to somewhat a musical style.
Another thing Springsteen says that Raj quotes in the piece is that Springsteen thinks of himself as a spiritual songwriter more than a political one. And I totally agree. There's this saying that, like, the personal is political that I think I hear thrown around a lot, especially in the last few years. And I agree with that, but the political has to be rooted somewhere in a person's values or their sense of self or beliefs about the world is like now and how they think that the world should be. And that to me is a deeply spiritual thing, one that isn't necessarily rooted in individual personhood, but in a community of believers in the grace of God. And that kind of comes back to this idea of blues and gospel and anthem songs. You know, creation with God is this creation of a world that someday will have no more crying and no more pain and no more justice and inequality. And Bruce's song here does a really good job of sitting in that and then recognizing that there are better things to come later on down the line. And it is so hard to not just sit in that. Like, it's a pandemic and there is a lot of injustice in our own society that's going on right now. And there are so many things that we as individuals cannot do to fix. Like, I can't solve racism or poverty or hunger, but I do have hope that there is someone who can and who is actively working in the world to do that right now. And that I have been invited along with the rest of the body of believers to share in that work of creation and recreation and to keep singing and be joyful in all of that.
There's a yearning, I think, to Springsteen songs for just what you're talking about. And then again, in the propulsive nature of it, captures that we can, as you're saying, work alongside bringing that yearning to fruition, not just wait without doing anything, but kind of work alongside. It's back to the communal nature, I think, of the music and the way of experiencing their music. So for more of Sarah on U2 and their song One specifically, check out the Pop Psalms ebook. Again, you can get that for free at thinkchristian.net/poppsalms. Sarah, you're just bringing all the generations together in your work. So thank you for doing that.
Doing my best. Glad to.
Thanks for joining me today, and we'll talk again soon, okay?
Thanks, Josh. This was great. She's so self-conscious. She has no idea what she's doing in college. That major that she majored in don't make no money, but she won't drop out. Her parents will look at her funny. Now, tell me that ain't insecure. The concept of school seems so secure. Sophomore 3 years, ain't picked a career. She like, get, I'll just stay down her and do it. Cause that's enough money to buy her a few pairs of new ears. Cause her baby daddy don't really care. She's so precious with the peer pressure. Couldn't afford a car, so she named her daughter a lady. If anybody can capture the ups and downs of the Psalms, it's Kanye West, heard there on one of his earliest hits, All Falls Down. Now, we could debate how much wisdom literature is found in Kanye's music, but there's no doubt his output models the joy, the angst, the praise, and the uncertainty of someone who is pursuing a life of faith. Dustin Markell, he explores that and more in his essay on All Falls Down that is part of the Pop Psalms ebook.
What other songs are covered there? We look into Kendrick Lamar's All Right, Talking Heads' Once in a Lifetime, Beyoncé's Run the World Girls. We even kick things off with a consideration of Truth Hurts by Lizzo. It's true, not all those songs are intentionally directed at God, as the biblical songs are, but we believe that God hears each one. In fact, listens to them with the same heart for his people that he listened to the Old Testament Psalms. Our Spotify playlist for this episode, it's going to help you listen along. Shorter than usual because it consists of the 12 songs that we write about in the ebook. Go ahead, cue it up as you read. Again, the Pop Psalms ebook is available now for free at thinkchristian.net/poppsalms. As always with our ebooks, I highly suggest you download it to the tablet of your choice so you can fully appreciate the ace design work by Skylar Rosenboom. Thanks to Eric Danielson and Sarah Welch Larson for coming on the show to help me celebrate the ebook's publication. You can follow Eric on Twitter at Eric Danielson, and Sarah is at Dodgy Boffin. I'm at Larson on Film on Twitter, and you can follow TC at Think Christian. The Think Christian podcast is a production of Reframe Media, a family of programs designed to help you see your whole life reframed by God's gospel story. Visit reframemedia.com for more info. Our audio engineer and post-production supervisor is John Reeder, and Reframe's co-director overseeing content strategy is Robin Basselin. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back in a couple of weeks for what I think is going to become a TC podcast tradition each year around Halloween. We're going to offer another Christian defense of horror. Joe George and Abiel Chessy will be here to discuss The Relic and 1992's Candyman. I'll talk to you then.